wonder if you wouldn't mind revisiting the most fundamental question of them all. What are the elements that make mystery fiction distinct from other forms of fiction? And secondly, what elements inform noir as a subset of mystery?
Okay. The first thing about detective, first let me define mystery. A couple of you were in the previous class, so you heard me define this already, but I will do it again because it simplifies the further conversation. I define mystery as any work of fiction in which a crime or the threat of a crime is central to the plot or the theme. So it's a broad genre, including espionage fiction, which is a crime against the state, crime stories, noir stories, detective stories, romantic suspense stories, pure suspense stories, psychological suspense, etc. So when I use the word mystery, I mean all of it. Detective story is one genre, a subgenre of that large genre. And it's a very tight subgenre. It requires the author to follow a set plan, much the way, as I also said before, the way a symphony or a sonnet is very strictly structured. So is a detective story. It doesn't matter if it's a good story, a bad story, good writer, bad writer, you have to have certain things. First of all, you need a crime. You need a detective. You need the detective to have something to detect. So you need a crime. Since a crime has been committed, you need the person who committed the crime, and you need a victim. So those are your fundamental characters. And what will happen in a detective story is after the crime, the detective will come in, find clues, find suspects. There are several people who are going to be investigated, who are going to be accused, who are going to look guilty, who are not going to look guilty, but the detective is looking at all of them. And largely inevitably, the person that we, the reader, thinks did it, didn't do it. And the one person that we know didn't do it, did it. Because if you didn't have that surprise element, it wouldn't be any fun to read. In an old-fashioned detective story, the detective would blatantly, the author would blatantly say, he would stop the action at some point. This is quite common in stories by Ellery Queen and John Dixon Carr. And through the character, Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers, they would basically say, well, I know the solution. Now, you have all the information. You've seen everything that I've seen. You know who did it. Well, we don't, because we're not smart enough. The detective is smart enough to have figured it out, getting a little help, of course, from the author, who knew all along who did it. Now, that's a standard detective novel. That has been true since Sherlock Holmes, almost true since, in the short story form, since Edgar Allan Poe invented the detective story in 1841 with Murders in the Rue Morgue, in which all the tropes of detective fiction are located in a single short story. He invented the entire form on his own. He had nothing on which to base it. Granted, there are elements of Gothic novels and so on which he used, but as a pure literary form, the detective story was created in whole in a single short story by Poe. Now, what separates a good detective story from the ordinary detective story? All of the things that you want in a novel, all of the things that bring you to read fiction for pleasure, creation of great characters with whom you empathize, who you recognize in some way, either in yourself or in other people that you know, they have to be part of the detective story. Otherwise, if they're just parts of a jigsaw puzzle, we don't really care that much what happens. you want a certain literary flair. You want to see metaphors. You want to see similes used properly and interestingly. You want a rich background, a place where that you recognize, that you may have never been there, but you know this place as you're reading this. You know where you are at all times. You want dialogue that sings. You want to hear somebody say something in a way that you've never heard it said before. Well, all of those things are true of fiction, and they're true of detective fiction. The only difference is that a detective story has to still fit within those very strict guidelines that I've already given you. Much harder to write than a standard piece of fiction, a piece of literary fiction, where not much may happen, what I call the New Yorker school of literary fiction, where at the end of the day, with all the beautiful writing, and really not that much happens. A detective story is quite different, different from that. So that's the detective story. How is that different from a noir story? In the detective story, you have a hero. The detective is the hero. We are the detective to some degree. We follow in his footsteps. In most detective stories, there is an audience surrogate, a readership surrogate, by which I mean the detective's sidekick, if he has one. Sherlock Holmes had his Watson. In Edgar Allan Poe, Dupin had his sidekick. And in most detective stories, there is either a sidekick who's always there, or is occasionally there, or other people will be there to ask the question that we want to ask. We can't ask it because, well, it's a book. It's a printed page. There's nobody that we can ask. But our surrogate, Captain Hastings asking Hercule Poirot in an Agatha Christie story, well, how did you know that such and such? What did you see? And then Poirot will answer him because that's the question we would have asked. So that appears in most detective stories so that we can learn what's going on internally in the detective's mind. And that detective is our hero. In noir fiction, there are no heroes. A form of film, called film noir, frequently people will say, oh, The Maltese Falcon is a great film noir. In fact, it's not at all a film noir. It may use some of the cinematic effects of film noir, dark, strange camera angles from time to time, nighttime in the city. All those elements that we're used to seeing in film noir may appear in The Maltese Falcon, but Maltese Falcon has its hero. Sam Spade is the hero. Even though he's not that great a person, he does the right thing. When his partner is killed, he said, you're supposed to do something about it. When your partner's killed, you're supposed to do something about it. He knows he's supposed to do something about it because he has a sense of morality, because he has humanity and he's a decent person on the inside. In noir fiction, is about losers. It's about people with no moral center, and their lack of morality, their lack of a moral center is what dooms them to death or to a living death, because they will never have a happy ending. They're depraved individuals and living a depraved life and doing depraved things, and they justly, rightly earn and deserve every bit of it.
You mentioned that Edgar Allan Poe is the originator of detective fiction, crime fiction. Similarly, I think the Gothic can be traced back to a specific moment in the late 18th century with novels by Horace Walpole and Matthew Gregory Lewis. Is there, what are the literary roots of noir? I mean, who is noir's Edgar Allan Poe?
Noir comes from many areas. Unlike the detective story, which is so clearly defined by the various tropes of a detective story as I've just described them, you can trace it directly to Poe. There are so many elements in noir fiction that come from different places. It comes from horror fiction to some degree, and gothics, of course. It comes from crime stories, which are different from detective story because they're generally told from the point of view of the criminal. And so it's a natural progression to move from a crime story to a noir story, because a criminal is inherently, by his very nature, by definition, a bad guy. Otherwise, he wouldn't be a criminal. So when that moves into noir, it's you can see the roots of it, but there have been crime stories forever. So you can't, it's impossible to point to one defining moment or one defining author or one defining work.
In William Gay's astonishing noir story in this anthology called The Paper Hanger, he writes, quote, "Just as there is a deepening progression to misfortunate, so too there is a point beyond which things can only get worse." To me, that seems to me like the existential heart of the
noir. There it is. There's the core right there of noir fiction.
Yeah.
And things will get worse, and they have to get worse, because the people who populate a noir novel don't have the decency, they don't have the rational thought that will get them out of a bad place. They will be driven by lust, by greed, by revenge, by jealousy, by the worst parts of human nature. And they will do it to a degree that is beyond rational. And so they become animals in their own lives, in their own stories. And it leads them into doom, because everything they've done for the wrong reason. They think they know what they're doing. They think they're doing the right thing, but they wouldn't know the right thing if it slapped them in the face, because they're morally bankrupt.
Curious about the demographics of some of these different genres. I know that, for instance, the Gothic has a number of very important female, you know, novelists who have been a part of that tradition of the Bronte sisters and so forth. Similarly, fantasy fiction, literature of the fantastic, is a world, especially in contemporary writing right now, the Kelly Links and the Elizabeth Hands, and earlier the Angela Carters of the world. So it's a kind of fiction that's written by both male and female. But noir seems to be, to me, to be more of a kind of a male, well, also mystery fiction. Ruth Rendell, Patricia Highsmith, some of the major players, not to mention Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers. But as I say, noir seems to be a male-dominated arena for fiction, or male-dominated genre. Is there a reason for that, or is there something, could you comment on that?
Well, you know, there may be a reason, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. Women tend not to write noir fiction, and a lot of women don't read noir fiction. They would rather read mystery fiction than the really dark, depressing tales of noir. When they do, they're really dark. When they turn to noir fiction, they're really dark. Joyce Carol Oates is a master of dark fiction, and she understands noir in a really serious way, almost a scary way. Patricia Highsmith, also, Strangers on a Train and the Ripley books, and pretty much everything she wrote is truly, truly dark. And almost all of her major characters have no sense of morality. Ripley is the most famous as being an amoral character, but obviously the major characters in Strangers on a Train too are lacking in morality, and that's true of most of her books. So she understood noir. But why more women don't write noir, I'm not sure I could say. I think I have theories. Which I'm coming up with right now as we speak. One of the tropes of noir fiction is the femme fatale. There's a woman at the core of a lot of these stories, in noir fiction that a man wants. She's particularly sexy, she's particularly gorgeous, and she has frequently and almost always in noir fiction has no sense of morality, no moral core. And so guys go after her and they'll kill other guys to get her, etc. They'll do anything to get her. I don't think women would write the same kind of story. A woman doesn't see other women the way men see women. Like, oh, I'll do anything for her, even though she's dumber than mud. She's so gorgeous, I want her anyway. Women wouldn't write that. Women are smarter.
I'm glad you said that, Otto. I saw you getting out on some thin ice there for a moment.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, noir is also the atmosphere of noir is as you said earlier, is about lowlife, amoral, immoral people. There's lots of bars, booze, degenerates, people at the fringes of society. And I think that's really kind of the milieu of noir. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this isn't, many of the stories we read today are often set in rural locales. They're blue collar crimes rather than white collar Wall Street kind of crimes. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if the guns and the knives and the will to torture, which occurs in several of these stories, isn't kind of more of a male, just a male world.
Well, it is in some of the stories that we have here. You know, in this book, a lot of the noir stories happen to be in rural settings. They involve hunting, they involve guns, they involve bars and drinking. Now, it's not to say women don't hunt, and not to say women don't go to bars and women don't drink. They do, but it's so prevalent in these stories. They tend to have a larger population of characters who are male. In almost all of the stories, there are more men than women. That's not true with the Elmore Leonard story, of course. It's not true in Faithless, but in Poachers and in Running Out of Dog, there's a lot of guys doing, you know, gun stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess more, you know, it makes more sense that men would write about that than women would write about that, I'm guessing.
Back to mystery for a second. As an editor and an anthologist, what do you look for in a novel or a story that compels you to want to publish it? And how do you go about editing a mystery novel?
Well, what compels me is what I talked about before, great writing. So that's easy. It's hard to define. You sort of know it when you see it, like pornography. Mm-hmm. When it's good, you kind of know it. And as an editor, having done this for a lot of years now, I know the difference between a good book, a bad book, and a great book. It's really not landing the space shuttle. It's pretty easy. So that's the first thing I look for. In a detective novel, I want to make sure that all the clues have been covered, that there are no loose ends. You can't have a loose end. That everybody finds that very unsatisfying. Oh, well, what about that guy who walked in on page 14 and he was there for six pages and we never see him again? Why was he there? You have to make sure that everything makes sense in a detective novel. It's the structure, you have to follow the structure. But in terms of putting together an anthology, that was part of the question, it's the same thing. You read a lot, I read a lot of stories to put an anthology together. This one was actually easier than most because there are a limited number of writers who have made their name in noir fiction. And again, eliminating many of the great hard-boiled writers because they had heroes. They had private eyes, that like Raymond Chandler compared his private eye to a white knight of an earlier time, a man who would walk mean streets without himself being mean. And so those were eliminated from noir fiction. Also, I remembered a lot of great stories from having read them. They were so good. Most of the stories in this book, especially the later ones, are stories that I had read within the last 20 years, sometimes more than once, because they resonated so strongly with me. So then I had writers like Jim Thompson and David Goodis and Cornell Woolrich, people who were famous for being noir writers, and I knew they had to be in the book, but I wanted the best story that they wrote. And so I read pretty much all of the stories, maybe not Woolrich because he wrote 400 stories. I didn't read 400 stories. But I knew there were some good ones that I could read, so I only had to read about 25 or so to find something that I was confident was a great story, and that's true of many of the other writers, some of whom were very, very prolific. Pulp writers, some of the earlier stuff from the 40s were written by pulp writers who wrote hundreds and hundreds of stories, and once I found a terrific story, that was it. But they were writers that I knew, so I had a finite number of writers that I had to look at.
Is there a tradition of noir fiction in England as well?
No. Really, only the United States has a lot of noir fiction. There are exceptions. There are a few writers that you've never heard of who have written really dark novels and a couple of shorts and a few short stories. It's starting to change a little bit. A writer like Ken Bruin, who's an Irish writer who is just terrific, and writes about Galway. And when I think of Galway, I think of Galway Bay and how nice it is, you know, and all that. Well, apparently there's a really dark underside to Galway, and Ken Bruin writes about it. I think there have been more dark noir stories and novels in the last 20 years from the UK than in all of history put together before that, maybe in the last 15 years even. Hmm. It's just not part of their culture.
Or so hadn't you could been. Not put together an 800-page anthology of
no.
British noir?
No, I could not. Not of good stories. I could find 10.
Huh. That's interesting. I noticed that disappearances, kidnappings, vanishings, missing persons seems to be a large part of noir as well. Not so much detecting where they went, because there are no detectives, obviously. I'm thinking of both William Gay's The Paper Hanger and Oates's Faithless. These are good examples of somebody disappears off the face of the earth, and that generates a story. Mm-hmm. And it will have an ending, because something will eventually be
explained. Yeah.
But the very fact that there's not a detective looking into it, That's what makes the difference between
It's certainly a major difference. A disappearance is somebody vanishing from a place that they shouldn't have vanished from is suspenseful. We want to know why. We want to know where did they go? Why did they leave? And so there's an element of strong suspense that leads us to keep reading that story, to find out, to get the explanation. What happened? What happened to that little girl? How did she just disappear? You know, what happened to that poor woman whose husband abused her? Did she really leave? Why did she leave? Is she coming back? You know, all of these are a way of creating suspense until the denouement, until the mm-hmm. explanation at the end.
James Crumley's story, Hot Springs, kind of flips the whole idea on its head because we are with the missing person during the course of the story, and there then the tension is like, when are they going to find me, you know, and what happens?
And it was almost inevitable that they were going to be found. We knew that the major protagonist, I guess, and Mona Sue, the girl that he couldn't resist. They were going to be found by the bad guys, because we knew the bad guys were hunting for them, and it was just a matter of time. But yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. You know, it's like, yeah, she disappeared with him, but we're there. So these guys are the detectives. The bad guys are the detectives in trying to find them, and they eventually succeed.
And that's when things get worse.
Oh, things get really bad.
Why do you think people are so interested in mystery fiction and crime fiction and noir?
Well, Well, those are different questions, actually. Mm-hmm. I think I know why in mystery fiction. Most of us are conservative in our way of living. I don't mean politically necessarily, but when we go home, we want to make sure that we want our house to be there. We want our stuff to be where it was when we left it. When we go to school the next day, we want our teacher to be there, we want our classmates to be there. We kind of know what to expect, and we want that to continue because that's the way we live our lives. In a detective story, something happens that's very different, and that's upsetting. Somebody's killed. That's a really big deal. And the great pleasure that we get from detective stories is that the bad guy is caught, he's punished, and life returns to what was essentially normal before. And that's very comforting. In real life, the bad guys don't always get caught, they don't get punished. We're outraged by it, we're afraid of what's going to happen next because of that. And so that's a great attraction for the detective story. Also, detective stories are fairy tales for adults. They are a battle between good and evil, the detective and the villain. And we love fairy tales. We liked them when we were children, and this is the same thing with more complexity, more nuance than a fairy tale. So it's not surprising that detective stories or mystery stories are popular. Why we're drawn to noir fiction is a little harder to explain, and I'm not entirely sure that I can. One of the things that happens and that has happened in recent years is that truly wonderful writers have written noir fiction, so we're drawn to the excellence of their prose. We love the lyricism of their writing style and the way they tell a story, and we come into that story and we enjoy the process of reading what it's all about, and that's a great pleasure. Why we would enjoy reading about hollow, depraved, amoral people is something for a psychologist to explain, maybe. But I think part of it is that we're separated from it. We have the comfort of not being part of that. We don't have to worry about us getting killed. We don't have to worry about our friends and neighbors and lovers dying at the hands of these depraved, crazy monsters. So we have that frisson of suspense and fear, the way we would in a roller coaster ride, say, or in a haunted house ride at Disneyland. But we're safe, so I think that is probably a major part of it.
One last question, then I'd like to open it up to the audience. And this question is a kind of a simple one, and you're on a college campus today. So if someone in the audience is interested in mysteries, is new to mysteries, and wanted to start reading them going back to the classics of the genre, how would you set their curriculum? What books would you consider foundational? You know, give you just 5 or 10 books, a half a dozen books that you feel like for someone to really get into contemporary mysteries, they really ought to know.
I would do it historically. I wouldn't necessarily contemporary. I would certainly recommend the 3 short stories that Edgar Allan Poe wrote. I would say you would have to read Sherlock Holmes. The Hound of the Baskervilles is one of the greatest mystery novels of all time. I still remember the first time I read it, I guess I was about 22 or 23, and Dr. Mortimer comes to visit Sherlock Holmes, talking about the curse that has hit the Baskerville family. And one of the Lord Baskerville has just been found dead with his throat horribly ripped out. And there were footprints leading to the body and away from the body. And Holmes, quite naturally, says, well, were they the footprints of a man or a woman? And Dr. Mortimer says, Holmes, they were the footprints of a gigantic hound. Whoa. Great moment. So certainly Sherlock Holmes, who the Conan Doyle stories by Holmes, 56 short stories, four novels, are what made mystery fiction popular. The Dupin, the three stories about Dupin by Edgar Allan Poe, did not have any influence on literature in America whatsoever. The next mystery that anybody wrote in America was 1878 by Anna Katharine Green. So he was not influential. He was influential in the long run, but not in the short run. So you'd have to read a Sherlock Holmes. I would say you'd have to read an Agatha Christie, because nobody ever plotted mysteries better. You would have to read a great American Private Eye. It's one of the major American contributions to world culture. Just like jazz, Americans developed the Private Eye story, which is now popular in many parts of the world. And I would say The Maltese Falcon would be a pretty good way to go. For just the sheer joy of reading a book that may not have been influential at all, but is one of the great novels that I've ever read, is The Woman in White by Wilkie Collins, which was written in 1860. Collins was a friend of Dickens, and the two of them collaborated on stories, on plays. They worked together quite a lot. And Dickens would help Collins with his characterization, because Dickens' characters are so great, and that was his great strength as a novelist. And Collins' greatest strength as a novelist was plot. So he would help Dickens plot some of his books. And The Woman in White is that perfect mix of modern Gothic, because it's a great romance story in the way that Jane Eyre or Wuthering Heights is. There's a hint of supernatural and real detective work going on. And I'm convinced that Dickens helped name some of the characters, because his villains were named Percival Glyde and Count Fusco. So you know those are bad guys. And the good people, one was named Walter Hartwright, and the girl, the lead, his love interest, was Laura Fairley. So I'm sure that Dickens had something to do with naming those. So that's five books.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. What do you think of Ross MacDonald, by the way?
I think Ross MacDonald is a great novelist. Not a good novelist, a great novelist. He has a series character named Lou Archer. Most of the crimes are the result of things that happened in the past, 15, 20 years ago, in families that did bad things. And his use of simile is almost as good as Chandler's.
And also, could you give us a couple of Agatha Christie's in particular? Because you
sure.
just said her generically, but I'm curious which ones.
Yeah, the most famous is The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. And it breaks every rule of detective fiction. She knew every rule, and she broke every rule in different books. And she shocks you with the way she breaks the rule. I won't name the books, but in one case, there are 12 suspects, and they're all guilty. In another book, a dead person is the killer. In another book, the narrator is the killer. All things that are absolutely verboten, and yet she makes it all believable, and you know that what she did, the way she structured the book, is fair. Every step of the way, she hasn't lied to you. If you were smart enough, you'd have picked it up. And none of us is smart enough.